Hello and thank you for tuning in. In today's episode, we speak with Cantilever. Cantilever is an investment fund that gives both institutions and individuals broad exposure to the Bitcoin entrepreneurial ecosystem. Both Brendan and John, partners at Cantilever, give us their perspective on why they started the fund and what drives the thesis behind their approach. We hope you enjoy, and as a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only.
Welcome to another episode of Build with Bitcoin. Today, my co-host Israel and I are really excited to welcome Brendan and John from Cantilever to our show today. And Cantilever is a special sort of a fund because in addition to investing in some of the top Bitcoin companies in the ecosystem, they also invest in some of the venture funds that are supporting these companies. So from their perspective, they've got probably almost a layer above or perspective that's even broader than a singular venture fund. So we're really excited to get their perspective, see how they see the entire ecosystem growing and evolving, and what sorts of companies and opportunities that they are most excited about today. Brendan and John, welcome to our podcast.
Thanks for having us, Lynn and Israel. It's awesome to be here.
Yeah. And probably just to start us off, if you can just tell us how you came to structure Cantilever in the way that you chose to, and also your origin story, how the two of you met, how you came together in this journey, and what is Cantilever structure?
Yeah, totally. I'm happy to start there. So Brendan and I had known each other for almost 15 years now. We both are based in the Boston area. Went to college kind of in and around Massachusetts. Didn't go to the same schools, but in and around Massachusetts, and started our careers in Boston. Brendan working at Silicon Valley Bank, and me helping to build a commercial real estate brokerage business focused on the venture-backed tech ecosystem. And so we just kind of, from being in Boston and both of us focusing on the venture-backed tech ecosystem in Boston, just kind of got to know each other. And we'd sit down for these like quarterly, we just would connect like over these quarterly lunches. And those probably started literally 12, 13 years ago. And we would just connect and kind of talk about what we were seeing in the market, what entrepreneurs, we should keep an eye on. And also like which investors were active in the Boston ecosystem. And so that was really kind of how we started our career and just our relationship in general. And then right around 2017, those conversations started to evolve slightly from what we were seeing in the Boston ecosystem to, hey, I just heard about this thing called Bitcoin. Like, have you ever heard of it? And as you all know, or as people know that start to kind of journey down the rabbit hole, it becomes a very quick obsession. And so we would have these quarterly lunches and starting from 2017 and about 50 to 60% of the time we would be talking about Bitcoin or the crypto space or like what podcasts we were listening to. And that really, we kind of proceeded down the journey and the learning path together. And Brendan has a really interesting story that I could let him go into in terms of like what kicked him down the rabbit hole. For me, it was actually a friend of mine that was a venture investor in Boston that was pivoting his career from like early stage B2B software, SaaS investing to like going all in on the crypto space. So 2017, 18, 19, 20, we're just learning, investing, really kind of felt early on in our journey that this, there was signal in Bitcoin and there was a lot of like noise and technical innovation potentially, but like a lot of just, I don't know, lack of like seriousness in the crypto space. And like Bitcoin was solving a very acute problem, which was like, it was fixing the money. And so like that kind of both drew us to really kind of focus on that more so than maybe some other things in the crypto general space. And in 2020, we're in COVID. We're both about to leave our kind of 15 plus careers for him at SVB and for me at T3, where I spent the majority of my early career. And we were talking every single day. We're in lockdown. And what are we talking about? We're talking about Bitcoin. And we're like, we need to do more than just talk about the asset, hold the asset, listen to podcasts, listen to people talk about the asset. We wanted to really get closer to the entrepreneurs building in space. We felt like that was the next progression for us to really kind of broaden our understanding. And so, again, this is 2020, kind of like mid to late 2020. There really weren't that many. There's maybe 1.5 venture investors focused specifically on the Bitcoin ecosystem. It was more like crypto generalists. And so we made some personal investments in more like crypto generalist funds. And that was really, again, for educational purposes. We just wanted to learn more. We wanted to be closer to the action and closer to the entrepreneurs. We felt like that was the best way to do that. And as part of that journey, we stumbled upon, or not stumbled upon, but like got introduced to a firm called 1031. And this was like eye-opening for us because they were a venture firm focused specifically on investing in the Bitcoin ecosystem. And as kind of Bitcoiners and believers that Bitcoin was much more than digital gold, that was kind of bluntly like had the potential to be the best money the humans have ever discovered or invented. And the foundation to a new kind of parallel monetary and financial network. We were like blown away by what 1031 was doing. Again, we're sitting there, and this is now like late 2021. We're sitting there, we're like looking at into 2021, into 2022. So like we're going through some of the blow-ups and some of the like craziness that happened in 2022 with Terra Luna and BlockFi and Voyager and all that stuff. And we're like sitting on these LP calls from our crypto investments and sitting on the LP call for like 1031 and the Bitcoin entrepreneurs. And you can really see from that perspective, a really like stark contrast in the culture and the ecosystems. It was very evident to us that you had like Bitcoin and the Bitcoin entrepreneurs, and you had crypto and the crypto entrepreneurs, and they were just different. I'd say the biggest difference for us was like the Bitcoin entrepreneurs had a level of, again, seriousness and determination. Like these people truly believe that they're building a parallel monetary and financial system that is going to benefit 8 billion people globally. And like, that is a big deal. And the crypto entrepreneurs, well, again, there was like some innovation and like stable coins and DeFi and NFTs and some of that stuff. It just wasn't as focused and again, serious. And so we were like, if there's any entrepreneurs that we really have conviction and backing, it's these people. It's the Bitcoin folks. And then you take a step back and you look at the capital flows within the broader crypto space. And over the last couple of years, $60 billion of venture money was raised and allocated for crypto at large, with less than $500 million. And this is back in, again, it was probably even less than $500 million. This is back in 2022-ish, less than $500 million was allocated towards the Bitcoin entrepreneurs. And we saw like that as a massive dislocation in capital flow. Now, like there's potentially some like good reason for that. Bitcoin's harder to build on purposefully. Like the base layer L1, like is very conservative. Frankly, we think that's a very good thing. If you're building a parallel monetary and financial system, you need that foundation on which that's going to serve 8 billion people. You need that foundation to be very sturdy. And you can't have a bunch of changes happening all the time, or else there's risks introduced to the protocol and so on and so forth. So you really need it to be a strong foundation. And that's what we believe Bitcoin to be. However, what changed was building in layers. And so Lightning, over the last few years, you started to see like a critical mass and more entrepreneurs flocking into the space because it leverages Bitcoin's security and decentralization at the base layer, but allows for portability much more quickly and cheaply. And so entrepreneurs see this, flock to this, and start building applications that kind of leverage this. So knowing that and seeing that, again, through our personal investments, we were like, there's a massive opportunity here to build a very impactful investment firm focused on the Bitcoin ecosystem, given the cultural contrast, as well as given the capital flow contrast that we saw.
Okay, yeah. So you just hit on quite a few very interesting and important points, John. And you know we can drill into those. But Brendan, before we do that, anything you'd like to add as far as the context on why Cantilever is focusing on Bitcoin?
Well, I think John summed it up pretty well. But just maybe a quick in terms of how I got here specifically. So I spent 15 years at what is now unfortunately a household name called Silicon Valley Bank. Much of that time that I was there was spent doing really growth stage venture investing up and down the capital structure of growth stage businesses, past product market fit, that were really looking for an alternative to traditional equity capital to scale. So I was venture debt, mezzanine debt, equity co-invests, all the like. I got into the space, like John mentioned, in 2017 through an investment. A company that will remain nameless, but be probably pretty obvious who it is. But I describe it as a major infrastructure player behind one of the most accepted stable coins, certainly across the United States, but also globally. That was my first foray in this space. And yeah, I'd heard of Bitcoin prior to that. My friend Robin, it was in my ear really since 2013, 2014, talking to me about this like magic internet money, and you know it had absolute scarcity, and I frankly didn't really care, or, wasn't paying attention to what he was talking about. But now this deal was really the forcing function for me to stay, to really go do the work, and doing that work was transformational. It is fundamentally shifted a lot of the way I perceive the world. It brought John and I together in a much more intimate way than just the general Boston VC networking, which was kind of the nature of our relationship early. You go through COVID, lockdown, pandemic, monetary and fiscal response. You're just like, whoa, like this is pretty profound innovation. And to not bury the lead, we think Bitcoin is fundamentally just the best money that humans have ever seen. And it's amazing that we believe that. And as we think about the way that, a transition of sorts that we're living through right now plays out, nobody knows what the end game is here, or, the end state or set of states, but the one that we certainly have the most highest conviction in is Bitcoin. And the market is giving us this opportunity of, you've got $60+ billion of venture money that's allocated into crypto, and you're telling us less than a billion of that is into Bitcoin. Like, this is, we're having our cake and eating it too. And so it just became a no-brainer for us to start this business and really express our views of where the world is going in terms of more and more global adoption of Bitcoin because of it just being the best money. Happy to get into why we think that, but also just this misallocation of capital between, crypto and Bitcoin.
Yeah, and I love both your origin stories as well leading up to Cantilever, because it sounds like you basically just identified a massive opportunity. You said, hey, there's not many people doing what we'd like to see out there. We want this product, in this case, in the form of a venture firm, right, or of an investment firm, and so let's build it, right? So we can maybe transition into that part of it. But you both hit on some pretty important aspects on what you observed between Bitcoin and crypto as you were studying this space, which I'd like to just kind of highlight and summarize on what you just mentioned, John and Brendan. I mean, you said you identified a very different approach in how Bitcoin entrepreneurs and crypto entrepreneurs were tackling their respective markets, right? You mentioned a strong sense of identity, purpose, of long-term thinking. You mentioned some of the monetary differences that exist in the protocols, which I think tie it quite well into the whole thesis behind Cantilever on your website, which we'll have a link to that in the show notes. But you make, in my perspective, a very a very good summary of why Bitcoin is so special, right? And in that thesis section of the website, you highlight Bitcoin as a monetary innovation and a technological innovation. So just maybe starting from there, the technological innovation is what a lot of the crypto, Web3, all these other tokens, they tend to build on that, right? They tend to market we're a better technology because of whatever that reason may be. You know, we're a supercomputer, we're smart contracts, you have all these functionalities. So they're kind of going off of the technological innovation. The monetary innovation is, and they go hand in hand, of course, but the monetary innovation is what sets Bitcoin miles apart from all the rest of these other tokens and protocols, right? You made mention to that, John, as far as Bitcoin was kind of born with a very clear purpose to kind of fix the money and build a parallel monetary system, and the importance of that base layer being so sturdy. So can you both speak to a little more as to why this monetary innovation piece is so important? I mean, is it the scarcity? What exactly there is a big missing component in the crypto and Web3 space?
Yeah. So before we go there, it might make sense to just kind of frame from a 50,000 foot view of the environment at which Bitcoin is coming into existence, and Bitcoin being now 15 years old. So the world is going through significant reorganization in terms of the world order. I don't think that's becoming more and more of a consensus view, certainly over the last, several years. And so it is that is largely being catalyzed by just slowly but surely declining trust in the major institutions that have governed the world order, the post-World War II world order. So these could be multinational organizations like the IMF. These could be central banks. This could be big technology companies. This can be Wall Street. This can be the healthcare system. This can be the education system. So there is just a structural decline in trust in these large organizations that have really governed the organization of humanity for the last 80, 90 years. And one of those systems is the monetary system itself. And, post-World War II, Bretton Woods, the system was structured in a way where it was really centric to the United States. And it was about the dollar, the treasury bond. And at the outset, there was a tie to a commodity, which was gold. Gold sat at the center of the system. And if you study the thousands of years of monetary history going back, gold was the preeminent monetary base layer monetary good that ultimately won the free market competition for the best money because of how it optimized for the characteristics of money, which are fungibility, portability, durability, divisibility, verifiability, but most importantly, it's scarcity relative to other commodities. And so that's why you saw gold at the center of a multitude of different monetary systems throughout thousands of years of history. Roman Empire, the Dutch Empire, the British Empire, the U.S. Empire, if you want to think about it in that way. And at the outset, gold, it was becoming less and less important. It was becoming more and more abstracted away from the system, just the centralization of gold. But ultimately, it still was part of the system until 1971. And what happened in 1971 was, as many people know, President Robert Nixon, Richard Nixon, severed the tie between the U.S. dollar and gold and converted the monetary system in full from one that was tethered to gold, the preeminent monetary good for thousands of years, to the trust and the debt of a sovereign nation, which was the United States. And that's a big deal, because what that meant was that was the start of really what has amounted to a monetary experiment in the context of thousands of years of monetary history. And we're seeing the certainly signs of fragility of that system today. You think about, you know, now volatile interest rates, inflation manifesting itself in not just developing economies, developed economies, geopolitical tension, trade imbalances, and just more regional trade happening. The list goes on. I mean, war. Like, there's just increasing levels of conflict around the world, and you know, a lot. Like, not all of this is because of the money, but we believe that a lot of these like big geopolitical forces that are at play in the world today are a function of a fragile monetary system. And so there's a lot of it's not all about the dollar and the treasury and the United States anymore. I mean, you look at things like the rise of the BRICS and, you know, that kind of, you know, economic setup, and where there's more unilateral trade happening in currencies that are not the US dollar. You're seeing the reintroduction of gold into, you know, the BRICS system in general, but also just kind of more, you know, central banks buying more gold over the last 10 years. The list goes on, but the point I'm trying to make here is that the world is definitely moving from one of unipolarity to multipolarity. And so bringing this back to Bitcoin is just rising in this changing world order, like soup that we're all living through. And it's one of many systems that are being architected through this period of transition. Crypto would be another one of those systems, right? And so we, you know, through thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of study of all this stuff, is we've concluded that, you know, look, it's a strong opinion held loosely. Like, we're constantly trying to figure out where we're wrong in this assumption, but we do believe fundamentally Bitcoin is the best money humans have ever seen because of how it optimizes and improves upon gold, verifiability, fungibility, durability, portability. But most importantly, this is the first time we've seen an absolutely scarce monetary good like Bitcoin. And that's a big deal. And so this is Israel, getting to your point of the monetary innovation. It is that. It is the creation of digital scarcity, digital gold, in a world that is moving from one of being analog led to digitally led. We're spending more and more of our time and dedicating more of our attention into digital spaces. And Bitcoin, in addition to just being the best money from the particularly from the scarcity perspective, it's form fit for the world in which we're transitioning to being more digitally native by the day. And so the tech, like from the technical innovation side, and Israel, what you're talking about in the crypto, we actually think there's some cool stuff, like interesting innovation and important innovation happening in the crypto space at large. And the one that we'll point to specifically is stablecoins. And if you look at stablecoins, like beyond Bitcoin as this emerging digitally native store of value, I mean, stablecoins are that is the part of this digital asset ecosystem that has demonstrated the most proven product market fit. The monetary system for, you know, the last 100 years has really been about the US dollar. The world is net short dollars. What are stable coins doing? They're just better technology to democratize the access to US dollar derivatives at global scale. That's a big deal. And it's like when you have, you know, 80-90% of the world trade being settled in dollars, and you know, 80% of the world debt being, you know, denominated in US dollars. That's a big deal. And yeah, stablecoin started on Bitcoin, but to be clear, that was a crypto led innovation, which is like where the name Cantilever comes from, is just this acknowledgement that this transition from what we would describe as analog fiat monetary systems to global digitally native apolitical ones is going to take time. And we think it's going to take decades. And there are going to be very important assets or ecosystems or commodities that are going to be cantilevers on this bridge, basically supporting this bridge from analog fiat systems to digitally native apolitical ones. And we think about things like crypto and fintech and even gold and the dollar as cantilevers that are going to just facilitate what we hope to be a fairly orderly, peaceful transition from, you know, these analog fiat systems to these digitally native and apolitical.
And then drilling down a little bit into what you're talking about, this whole shift from the US dollar dominated economy to one that's more global, even the breakdown of the petrodollar system and the rise of BRICS and the need for other countries to be able to transact in US dollars through stable coins. How do you as fund managers see geographic opportunities? I mean, I think it's always been where venture capital has been concentrated in the U.S. and a lot of the innovation. What are you seeing in terms of taking advantage of the investment opportunities that the thesis that you just laid out presents? And how are you viewing the ecosystem? Do you see different pockets of innovation, either in Africa, LATAM, India, other parts of the world, or how are you addressing that?
I can take a crack at that. So, Bitcoin is a global phenomenon, and it is a resource that hopefully at scale, all 8 billion people will have utilization for and exposure to. Right now, we're definitely seeing pockets of innovation in areas outside the US. Fedi, as an example, which is an application that many Bitcoiners, I'm sure, have heard of before, and even folks in the crypto space. I mean, that technology is designed it's being utilized most, and it's early, but in Africa. Obi and the founders of that company have built that primarily, like, for the first market to be exposure to that is in the continent of Africa. You're seeing other companies like Ibex focus on LATAM, so Latin America, and then obviously the whole host of other ones in the US. As fund managers, we need, and as we think about proper portfolio construction, we want to make sure that we have exposure to global innovation. And as we kind of think about portfolio construction, and maybe even taking a step back on this, this wasn't your question, but it's kind of tangential to it. Like, as fund managers, what are we trying to do for our LPs? Like, quite like bluntly, we want to give folks the exposure to the best entrepreneurs building in the space, period. It doesn't matter where they are. Now, our tactic and strategy for doing that is investing in a mix of emerging fund managers and as well as entrepreneurs, like building products and applications in the ecosystem. And we want to make sure that, like, geographic dispersion is part of our portfolio construction, because we are seeing hotspots around the globe where you're seeing an uptick in Bitcoin adoption and innovation.
And I think even to level it up a bit from there in terms of the why of that question, like, why are there these hot pockets of innovation happening globally? Well, it's, you know, the United States has been, from a monetary perspective, I mean, people like to describe it as the cleanest dirty shirt, which I think is a decent way to think about it, meaning like pretty good monetary policy, you know, pretty good respect of property rights and the rule of law in the nation. Not perfect, but it's pretty good relative to alternatives. As, like, you go to, you know, half the world lives under authoritarian regimes or under, you know, high, like double digit inflation rates. And so, you know, Bitcoin in the United States, it's an emerging, some might describe it as speculative store of value that's coming online. And, you know, we got the dollar, we've got Venmo, we've got PayPal. We don't really need, like, why do we need this? Well, you go to Venezuela, you go to Argentina, you go to an innumerate number of companies after that, and you tell the average citizen, hey, I've got a money that the government can't print and they can't take it from you. What do you think? Like they get it immediately because they've lived under these, you know, whether it's a hyperinflationary event or confiscation of assets, they just understand the importance of distancing the state from the money and, you know, what that does for property rights. So yeah, LATAM, Africa, parts of it, like, those are actually where, like, some of these early products and services being built in Bitcoin are going to have the product market fit first, because they're solving real problems that exist in those jurisdictions today that may manifest themselves and continue to increasingly manifest themselves in more developed economies over time. But that's just where the product market fit is for some of these early primitive applications is today.
Yeah, you know, and it's fascinating. I mean, I think lots of the applications, the successful applications, are yet to be seen, because, I mean, money is something slightly different to all of us. And given its just borderless nature and, you know, it's an open system, it's an open network, it can be accessed by anyone in the world, like you're describing, Brendan. You know, so all these massive opportunities from building successful applications on the Bitcoin protocol are yet to be seen. And it sounds like you guys, I mean, it's really interesting the structure you guys chose, because you're investing in a multitude of fund managers that are on their own picking different startups in the space, different early stage Bitcoin company. So you, put it another way, to me, it sounds like you're basically indexing early stage Bitcoin companies globally. I mean, how is that taken from, and maybe you can explain a little bit, you know, who your investor profile is, but, you know, is it high net worth individuals, family offices, institution, whatever that mix is? How do they see it from an allocation perspective? Of course, first you have to make that initial hurdle of, okay, I understand what Bitcoin, the asset, is, why it's important to have sound money and hard money. After that, I imagine start getting curious into all the innovation and the companies that have yet to emerge from this open protocol. How do they view that as far as, you know, I don't know, an allocation perspective? What's some of the feedback that you guys are seeing?
Yeah, I mean, John was alluding to this earlier. But, like, this was, you know, in part and parcel, this venture fund that we managed was really just a product that John and I wanted ourselves, first and foremost. And what do we mean by that? So, well, we'd been studying Bitcoin, we had, you know, dabbled in, you know, the broader crypto ecosystem, and then we saw the entrepreneurs that were moving out of crypto, out of Web 2. And to build in the Bitcoin space, and we're like, we want exposure to that. And so, in terms of, like, how we've constructed like our fund is just really catered to people like us. Done well, this is and will continue to be a fund that is accessible to as many high net worth individuals as, you know, the taxonomy of, you know, investor regulation would suggest in the United States, like, as we can get. And yes, that's going to, where's the line between high net worth individual and family office and multifamily office is today, it's definitely not an institutional product. I mean, it's less than $1 billion category, but to John's point, it's up from less than 100 million, like 3 or 4 years ago. And from a manager count perspective, it was 2 in 2020. it's 25 managers that we're tracking today. And so, you know, like it, like, you know, future past performance is not a, like extrapolate future before, but like the trend line is working in our favor, right? Like the, we've got Bitcoin ETFs now. And so, you know, the average allocator of capital, irrespective of, you know, high net worth individual all the way up to massive institution, you got to have a point of view on Bitcoin now. And so it starts with understanding, you know, the fundamentals of what Bitcoin, the asset, is. And then you can start to push into, oh, well, there's this whole like monetary network component to it. And like there's innovation happening on top of this monetary network, like vis-a-vis the you know, the these entrepreneurs building products and services that are reducing the friction of adopting Bitcoin, acquiring Bitcoin, and also just increasing its fundamental utility as an asset through this layering process that Bitcoin is going through.
Brendan, I'm going to ask a question that I would imagine a lot of your potential investors ask, and that is, why invest in Bitcoin companies if I could invest in Bitcoin itself? Or what's the trade-off in terms of risk return? Or how do you address that? Because I'm thinking that probably your investors are familiar with Bitcoin and they understand exactly what we've been talking about the potential of it being a new financial foundation for global transfer value. And so if that's a big enough opportunity on its own, what do you say about taking the potentially additional layer of risk of investing in Bitcoin companies?
That is the question. The way we think about it and the way when we're conversing with, you know, current and prospective LPs is, you know, before investing exposure to Bitcoin companies and Bitcoin innovation, like you should probably have some sort of strategic, not financial advice, but this, you should probably have some sort of strategic allocation to the asset itself. And look, for many, that's going to be enough. And, you know, getting exposed to Bitcoin in a meaningful way in your, in a portfolio. I mean, you can do the math in terms of, you know, Bitcoin is a $1.5 trillion asset by market cap today. I mean, just comparing that to gold, that's a 10 bagger from here, which is about a $15 trillion asset. And if we're saying Bitcoin is an order of magnitude better than gold because of its absolute scarcity and it being more form fit for the world in which we're living, which is more digitally led by the day, you know, that's pretty nice potential opportunity there. But Bitcoin, like having a strategic allocation to Bitcoin, it does broaden out beyond the asset. There are a multitude of ways to express a Bitcoin thesis dependent of the asset, venture being one of those. And so the optimal investor for Cantilever is really one that's like has a general understanding of Bitcoin, is exposed in what they would describe as a meaningful way, and are really just looking to go layer, like thinking about Cantilever as like a levered bet on what Bitcoin, the potential upside as measured in fiat terms, could be. The coolest part of this whole question, though, is how this like manifests back into the entrepreneurs. And what this is doing in terms of driving more efficiency and effectiveness in capital allocation decisioning. And so if you think about any entrepreneur, they could be a fund manager, they could be a CEO of a startup. The most important job that an entrepreneur has is capital allocation. How do I allocate the scarce assets of my business to make investment decisions that are going to drive value? And in, you know, we've seen traditional venture capital grow by, I mean, I live this at SVB, orders of magnitude. I mean, it's like hundreds of billions of dollars is going into traditional venture capital. And a big reason why that's happening is because people are intuitively, most don't understand this explicitly, but they're trying to outrun monetary debasement and they're trying to basically chase returns. And so in Bitcoin, it's different. In Bitcoin, like now the hurdle rate is the, and so the hurdle rate is Bitcoin, is the potential appreciation of Bitcoin. And as we just established, that there's tremendous upside in the asset itself, which then if you're a Bitcoin business and Bitcoin sits at the center of your treasury management strategy, you're now thinking about, okay, is this new office or hiring this marketing executive or deploying a new sales team, how does that expense, like what's the upside of that expense, that investment decision, that capital allocation decision, compare to, and how much value is that going to drive my business relative to, well, if I just hodled Bitcoin? We are actually already seeing the early manifestation of this is of, there's a lot of early stage Bitcoin businesses that are actually like operating at or around profitability. There are very, very few businesses out there that are actually like running, you know, burn rates that would come an angry mule's kick and close to what you see in traditional venture capital. Now, that's a very aspirational, like this, like that Bitcoin is the hurdle rate is a very aspirational bar. And so not necessarily like expecting that like every entrepreneur, every company is going to actually outperform the asset, but the more companies, the better the infrastructure, the more entrepreneurs that are building products and services to reduce the friction of Bitcoin's adoption and increase its utility as an asset, there's like this synergistic flywheel that exists between better infrastructure means lower friction of adoption, increased utility that manifests back into price. And so thinking about a Bitcoin allocation more broadly than the asset makes a sense from just pure diversification perspective, but also just the synergistic relationship between investing in Bitcoin, the asset, and investing in this example, venture capital, which is just really building out better infrastructure, which is accretive to the asset itself.
Just to put a cherry on that too, I mean, we Brendan and I, we do believe candidly, like the largest companies over the coming decades are going to be built within the Bitcoin ecosystem. And so why do we think that? Well, Bitcoin is global. It's permissionless. Anybody can own it. Anybody can build on it. And it has a very passionate embedded user base. And so when you combine those things with really great entrepreneurs that are infusing Bitcoin into their products, into their services, into their balance sheets, we think that that setup is really kind of perfect for seeing some extremely large global businesses being built within the Bitcoin ecosystem. And the strategy that we are taking to attack that gives our LPs the highest probability of getting exposure to those entrepreneurs and those businesses.
Yeah, I just want to kind of underscore what I hear you saying. John, early in the conversation, you talked about the seriousness in which you saw Bitcoin company founders approach their building of the business. Then Brendan, what you just described in terms of the way they're making decisions because they have an appreciating asset that they need to give up in order to make certain business decisions versus the traditional tech that has money thrown at them in a depreciating asset. So you're looking at a whole new paradigm shift in how tech companies are being formed and thinking about their growth and really focusing on true long-term growth based on solid decisions and having an asset on their balance sheet that is appreciating in value. So are you seeing this quantum shift and really how a tech company thinks and builds? And is that part of the reason why it potentially becomes an even better or stronger asset allocation than Bitcoin itself?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing and what we would expect to see is just more like gone are the days of growth at all costs. And like growth is important, right? Any business is like there's an incentive to grow and drive shareholder value vis-a-vis growing. But I think we're just going to see more balance between, instead of it being 150% or 200% growth targets, it's It's something lower than that, but it's done in a way where there's more discipline around the capital allocation decision. So just like less waste, less capital, like a higher probability of the capital being invested into a Bitcoin entrepreneur that understands Bitcoin, is really thinking about that as the hurdle rate, is going to deliver more ROI per unit of value, dollar, bit, like Satoshi, whatever, in those investment decisions in their business relative to, you know, an operator that might be an incredible, like millions of incredible entrepreneurs potential out there in the world. But we think the best ones are the ones that are going to deliver the best ROI per unit of value invested in their business are going to be one entrepreneurs that fundamentally understand Bitcoin.
Yeah. And you know, it's such a clear mindset shift. I mean, you know, Lynn and I have been lucky to, we started this recently, of course, but the more we speak to, I mean, both some of the startup founders and some of the fund managers and professional allocators like yourselves, I mean, it's just very crystal clear that there's a completely different mindset going into this, right? Whether you're allocating capital or you're building a product or service, it's just such a recurring thing that we're starting to hear, right, Lynn? I mean, it's basically, we're here with a very clear purpose. We have discipline, we have patience, and we're in this for the long haul, right? And that change in, you know, the previous models of growth at all costs that you were just, you know, referencing, Brendan, it's just, I don't know, it's astounding how clear that shift is. We're starting to, and what we hear from some of the fund managers and allocators is a little bit of what you guys were mentioning in the beginning, it's a bit of a sense of, I can't believe I get to do this and the rest of the market isn't seeing this massive misallocation of capital, right? I mean, you referenced some of the numbers of, you know, under $1 billion in Bitcoin and 60 or so billion in the broader crypto space. And you're talking about under 2%, you know, like that's a huge disparity, right?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it just points to the fact that we're really early in this opportunity, and it takes a kind of a unique vision. No matter how you come through it, it's like, if you, like myself, it's like in the early days of the internet, I saw that. And a lot of people did not see that opportunity when it was happening. And then people come in, and I think we're in a similar case today, where Bitcoin, in my mind, is an even greater opportunity, because in addition to decentralized communications, really decentralized value exchange. So, you know, I just think it's a much larger opportunity that people are not yet seeing. So I agree, Israel. And I think that a lot of these conversations point to this. And clearly, Brendan and John, you're seeing this too. And that's why why you are where you are. Yeah, maybe we shift a little bit to more tactical, practical. I know we've been talking big picture about Bitcoin, but let's drill down a little bit more into Cantilever itself. You've raised a fund. Can you talk a little bit about where you are in the fund process? And are you still accepting LP interests, or how do people learn more about your fund? How are you seeing deal flow? Just talk to us a little bit about the mechanics of your fund and who might be an appropriate type of an investor, understanding this is not financial advice. Or it's...
Yeah, so we do have a fund. We did a first close on that fund last year. We've got an initial portfolio, predominantly of managers today, which is, you know, representing about 60 to 70 different unique business underlying the portfolios. We're going to continue to raise capital for that fund. I mean, the funny thing is about this being in this business is, and you know, in hindsight, it's 2020, but appreciating how cyclical this business is and how Pavlovian the market is to just the price. I mean, when the price, like, it's amazing how much more people care when the price is ripping versus like when, you know, last couple of months have been pretty quiet because it's been kind of trading sideways. And that's, I don't know, like we spend next to no time thinking about the price outside of it being just really a proxy for adoption and attention that people are paying to at least the asset. What we found is there's just a considerable underappreciation from most of the LPs that we're encountering of just the opportunity set that there is this Bitcoin VC ecosystem emerging. I mean, even very sophisticated allocators of capital that we engage with that have done a lot of work in the crypto space, it's been very underappreciated, just really the emergence of this Bitcoin VC ecosystem. As far as like where we're going with the firm, I mean, the venture strategy is really foundational. I mean, it's what the ecosystem needs. And so we think about our role in that is, again, one of these cantilevers and, you know, supporting this transition. We're just like facilitating capital flow to back the best entrepreneurs building in the Bitcoin space. And that could be fund managers, that could be companies directly. Over time, we've got much bigger aspirations, again, to serve this role. How can we apply our networks, our skill sets, our backgrounds, and really our emerging brand help funnel capital from the legacy system and to support entrepreneurs building in the Bitcoin space? And it almost certainly won't be captive to just venture investing. John and I have committed the rest of our careers to building this business. So more to come on that. We're really trying to stay focused with the matter at hand. But yeah, I think it's like anyone who's just kind of curious about, you know, we do a lot of work in just really the education and evangelization of this ecosystem as well, which is like, we have a podcast ourselves. Like you all kind of have to have a podcast, right? It's like our newsletter or something, because ultimately it is so nascent in terms of the understanding of like the potential of this technology. The first step is to help the layman, you know, educate themselves and really just evangelize the space before you get anywhere close to, okay, like how should I like actually explicitly invest capital?
Which, by the way, will anyone interested in the broader venture capital topic with Bitcoin, there's a great episode in the Cantilever podcast, which we'll also include in the notes. So highly recommend the podcast as well. And I mean, to that note, John and Brendan, you guys do a great job evangelizing, I mean, educating, which is still, I think, probably one of the biggest barriers that we're seeing to adoption. It's of course, it can be a difficult topic to understand, and it's a deep rabbit hole, or it covers a lot of very deep fundamental issues that we're all living through. So education is just vital, and the podcast is great. Maybe we can do a quick plug here, because Lynn and I actually, we got in touch because I was listening to one of your episodes where you have Lynn on as a guest. So, you know, first of all, thank you for that, that unintentional introduction. And it just kind of goes to show you never know where, you know, curiosity can lead, and also the power of these kind of open networks and people starting to get more involved.
Yeah, we owe a big debt of gratitude to Cantilever Podcast, because if it weren't for that, Build with Bitcoin may not exist. So the conversations that you sparked and your thinking around venture capital being such an important part of the Bitcoin ecosystem, that got the conversation going between Israel and I, and we're drilling down on that. So thank you. We really appreciate it. And thanks to Danny.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. It's like, that was, you know, Danny does an incredible job. I mean, he's a third member of our team, really facilitating great conversations, both with just John and I, but also just entrepreneurs, really showcasing the, you know, entrepreneurial talent that's operating in the space. And it's cool. It's like hearing stories like that is so cool, because like you put these things out into the ether, and you're just like, who the hell's listening to this? They're like what's going on? You guys are early in a podcast. I'm sure you're feeling like in some ways the same thing. But it's like when you hear these stories of like, holy shit, like this is like, it's actually like people are like, real people are really listening to this, and like real connections are being made, and people like, it's it's doing its job. And you just sometimes you don't know like explicitly like what job it has done or is doing. And but it's like creating, I mean, that's the beauty of the internet. Like it's like frictionless to create this type of content and, you know, like put it out there and let people make their own decisions in terms of, you know, what they do and don't incorporate into kind of their view of the world. And so, yeah, we'll keep at it. We'll keep doing the thing, as I'm sure so you all are. And we're grateful for you guys for having us on and giving us the opportunity to talk with you. And I just keep doing what you're doing, because we fundamentally agree that the biggest missing link to, you know, more broad-based adoption to this very important technology is the educational piece.
And just we do want to kind of set the tone for having you back again, because we just feel that there are very few investors that are focused on the space, to your point, John, looking at the funds that have been invested in Bitcoin versus the overall crypto space. So your perspective and your expertise is so important. So we are finding, and we're really excited to see how many entrepreneurs and founders there are building with Bitcoin and creating companies to support the ecosystem, whether it's in terms of adoption or mining or even communication layers on top of Bitcoin or fund exchange transmittances. And so there's a whole universe of different opportunities out there, but very few fund managers. So we really hope to have, we plan at inviting you back and having you periodically give your overview of what you're seeing, you know, in the market on a more timely basis, and the certain specific opportunities or sectors that you're seeing the most attention or greatest, founder activity in as well.
Yeah, we're excited to come back and continue the conversation with you guys. And just to echo what Brendan said, thank you both for doing what you're doing, and Lynn for your support. You've been with us, just supporting us, been a friend since day one. So we're super grateful.
Any final closing comments that you want to leave our audience with, our listeners, words of advice or words of perspective?
To steal Michael Saylor's words, Bitcoin is hope. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on in the world out there. There's a lot of things that you could be discouraged with, especially entering into an election cycle this year. Bitcoin is kind of like an incredible optimistic movement in some ways. And just to be building within this space is like incredible. And so what a time to be alive. And yeah, just super grateful to have this and to meet people like you. And yeah, what a time to be alive.
I just get educated. Right? There's so much, like it's been even the last couple of years, the professionalization of the content that exists in the space. It's so easy to get a baseline level of understanding and around Bitcoin than it was even a couple of years ago. And so it doesn't mean you should invest, but you should do some work and figure out if it is for you, because in parallel with that, it's as easy as ever to get exposed to the asset, such that if you like what you see through your educational process, and even if you think there's a 5% chance, a 10% chance, a 20% chance that, you know, the four of us are directionally right on what we're talking about here, I mean, it probably justifies some allocation greater than zero. So get educated and get allocated.